Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, September 29th, welcome to the show, friends. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
So if you walk along Market Street these days, you'll see a downtown that is pretty lively on the weekends. Had a chance to be downtown this weekend. People are eating outside. There's open streets during the week. City workers back in the office. Employment growth is up. But at the same time, commercial office vacancy rates remain high. And there are office towers that are selling at fire sale prices.
Fire sale prices.
Fire, like half off, y'all.
Come
half
get this off building.
Off. Yeah. So where is Center City post-pandemic? Is it back or are we asking the wrong question? Today, we're going to pull back the curtain and do a check-in on development downtown. We have two guests that are in the thick of it. We have Prima Katari Gupta, president and CEO of the Center City District. We also have Mark Catella of Altera Property Group, a major developer working on some pretty big projects downtown. And we want to hear from you. What's your big idea for revitalizing Center City?
Bring back the duck boats.
Yeah.
No, that's a bad idea. Don't do that.
What do you got? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, share the video, but also leave your comments in the chat. And I remember the duck boats.
I think they're gone, right?
They're gone. It was some bad things happened.
Oh, really? Okay,
yes.
Bad joke then. Yeah. I didn't remember that. I just remember they used to park them right over here.
They were pretty cool. They ride to Schuylkill and ride around town. So
Don't bring back the duck boats, but do give us your ideas. What's your idea for revitalizing Center City? Call 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org.
Yep.
Trio of local news stories first, Cherry.
Yep.
Starting with a little skullduggery.
Uh-oh.
In the world of politics. What are the chances?
Mm-hmm.
A GOP-aligned mailer is urging voters to reject three Democratic Pennsylvania Supreme Court justices in the upcoming retention vote. That's not unusual.
No.
The mailer from Commonwealth Leaders Fund says, quote, the liberal Supreme Court gerrymandered our congressional districts to help Democrats win. And then right next to that text, there is a congressional district map of our state, Pennsylvania, that indeed looks very gerrymandered. So far, no red flags, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem.
Uh-huh.
This weird looking map was actually drawn by Pennsylvania Republicans.
Ooh.
And struck down by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court for being unfair and unconstitutional. So they're heavily implying that the judges that you are voting on drew this weird map, when in fact it is the exact map that they rejected. David Wecht is one of the three Democratic judges up for retention this year. He told the Inquirer, this is, quote, the most shameless political ad I've ever seen, ..
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of fury about this particular mailer, maybe a sign of the times type thing, Cherry. I don't know.
Definitely. I mean, this ad is just adding to the contentiousness of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court retention race. I mean, Republicans have been working overtime to get voters to pay attention to what's usually a pretty sleepy election.
Exactly.
Most people don't even pay attention to these retention races.
Exactly. They're trying to break through.
Yeah. And they've invested millions and clearly are using whatever means necessary to get people to pay attention. And I know you mentioned this, but, you know, this mailer is connected to Jeff Yass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't mention
that. You
didn't
mention
that.
I mean, you're mentioning
it.
Yes. Go ahead. I mean, this, the richest man in Pennsylvania, huge player in local politics.
Yeah. He's connected to the PAC that funded the mailer.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously his name draws a lot of eyeballs because he's a mega donor.
Yep.
But regardless of his involvement in this, it is a pretty brazen ad.
It
from
is.
What I can tell. There certainly Democrats not innocent when it comes to misleading ads, right? There's something happening in New Jersey right now where the Democratic candidate is running these ads claiming the Republican wants to raise taxes when it's really something that's taken vastly out of context. So this is not new. The thing that it makes me think is, A, if there were ever rules around this stuff.
And who's policing this stuff? No one.
Yeah,
it
no
doesn't
one
seem
is.
Like anyone is. Yeah.
The rules are gone. The dark money is here. I see a lot of politicians, I feel like, when they're doing like public appearances, sitting there thinking, you can almost see the wheels spinning. Like, I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to make a mistake. And I'm like, it doesn't even matter anymore. You don't even have to make a mistake. They're going to take something you said. They're going to clip it. They're going to twist it.
Out of context.
Out of context. So I think my thing with politicians now is I would tell them just be you, do you, because they're going to take something anyway.
Yeah.
Just go full bore, be yourself. And like, because they're unscrupulous. All this stuff's going to happen anyways. Who cares? Yeah.
But the thing that stands out to me, it's unclear how many folks got this mailer and the impact, but it's hard to correct misinformation. People don't realize, especially in low information races like sure. this. I've done a lot of judicial, you know, forums, low attendance. Okay. Like sometimes you'd be happy if 30 people are there.
Totally.
So most people don't even know these judges. They don't know anything about them or what they've done. And so when there's misinformation out there, people tend to believe it because they don't have a ton of information.
What do you think about my advice to politicians? Just fly off the handle. Do yeah. whatever you want.
I mean, I just think
I feel like there's no point in like trying to be careful anymore.
But I feel like people should be careful still. And if you make a mistake, don't worry about it as much. But yeah. I mean, being intentionally misleading, I don't know if I agree with that. But
I'm saying the opposite. Don't need to be scripted.
No need yeah. to be scripted.
Don't
yeah.
be scripted because
those days are
you
over.
Can be scripted and they're going to take some of the script and flip it on you.
Yeah, those days are over. Right. Second story. Three teens, ages 16, 17, and 19, were charged with a slew of crimes following recent car break-ins in Gloucester City, New Jersey. But it turns out parents of two of the teens will also be charged. The parents of the 16 and 7-year-old accused of the car break-ins, they face charges for failure to supervise their children. And police can issue a warning and encourage corrective action. But if nothing changes, the parents can face up to 90 days in jail and fines of up to $2,000 if their kids are found delinquent when it comes to crimes like robbery, theft, vandalism, disorderly conduct, and a number of others. Now, this charge comes under a new Gloucester Township ordinance that passed into law this summer. And this new law was the township's response to incidents of youth misbehavior at last year's Gloucester Township Day, where fights broke out and hundreds of teenagers caused chaos. And if you recall, there has been a lot of debate over the past few years about whether or not to hold parents responsible for the crimes of their minor children.
I am by nature skeptical of this
mm-hmm.
as a crime fighting approach. I guess I'm just trying to envision the scenario where you have a parent who doesn't care that their teenager is breaking into cars, but if you threaten the parent with 90 days in jail, all of a sudden they're going to start parenting their kid. Like, what parent does that describe? Most parents do care.
Most parents absolutely do. Yeah.
Like, who's on the fence here? Who that like that incentive pushes them to like have a relationship with their child? And then you put the parent in jail.
Now, and then what? And if there are other kids,
now the family is like broken up, or they have to pay $2,000. They have, you know, fewer financial means. It just seems, I would love to see the evidence that this works, because it strikes me as kind of destructive without a really purpose or a logic.
And I mean, a lot of people, criminal justice reform advocates, have been really against this
yeah.
because it disproportionately affects communities of color, parents of color, right? But the big issue that this has come up again for is gun violence, right? Kids who shoot up schools or commit crimes with guns that they wouldn't otherwise have access to if it wasn't for the parents. There's been a lot of talk about that. But as far as petty crimes, I mean, this is the first time a parent has been charged under this new ordinance
yeah.
with Gloucester Township. So we'll see.
Yeah, come back with the data, I guess.
Yeah.
Story number three. Cherry, I guess close your eyes, maybe.
Okay.
Can you imagine a world where Aiken's Oval outside the Art Museum has no cars? No cars. Just one
wow.
continuous park. And the
beautiful
Benjamin Franklin Parkway is more walkway than roadway.
Wow.
Maybe it'll happen. It might happen. There's a
okay.
new deep dive by Philadelphia Magazine on efforts to green Philly's famous Benjamin Franklin Parkway and Museum Road to make it more pedestrian friendly, more walkable. There's actually a plan that's being released this fall called Parkway to Park to make some of these big changes and add up to 16 new acres of green space along the parkway.
Yeah, when you first mentioned this story, I was like, I don't know. I've crossed the parkway. It's not a big issue, but the redesign is actually pretty cool. It was simply remove the circle near the art museum and reroute the cars to the area below Aiken's Oval and allow cars to pass on either side of the museum. Wouldn't be bad. And I did not know this, but 8 people were killed or seriously injured in that stretch between the Art Museum and Logan Circle just between 2018 and 2022. So it can be a very dangerous area. And so I don't know, like, it could work. It could work. And it would just make it really cool. People go by the Rocky statue all the time. You go over there.
There's a lot of people milling
around.
There's
lots of people. Yeah. Why not make it safer?
I think it would be cool if they could pull it off. Obviously, actions over words. Because there have been people talking about this idea of making the Parkway more of a green space really since the inception of the Parkway in the early 20th century. So is there the will? Is there the money to make this happen?
I don't know.
I'm a little skeptical just because, again, it's been in the offing for so long. But I think it would be ultimately a good thing for the city because, like you said, there are naturally lots of people down there. And making that a more pleasant space is only going to make that more of a magnet for residents and tourists. Yeah. And they're all there to see the statue. Maybe if it's a little nicer, they'll stick around. They'll go in the museums. Mm-hmm. They'll frequent the shops. Like, you could build some momentum there.
Yeah,
like
you could put some potential. Trucks. You could put some little trucks, food trucks up there.
Food
it could
trucks,
be really
sure.
nice.
The potential is obvious, yeah. right? And yeah. I think that the cars do deter some people from at least lingering and sticking around. So we'll see.
Pretty nice area. So we shall see.
Speaking
Center
of,
City.
Yeah, speaking of Center City, right? Getting people to linger, getting mm-hmm. people to shop. We're going to talk about the future of Philly's downtown district. We want to hear your ideas for revitalizing Center City. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Depending on which data point you pick, post-pandemic Center City is either thriving or flailing. Pessimists will point to the office building sector, where vacancies remain high and some properties are selling for less than half of their prior value.
Optimists can point to foot traffic, which has nearly bounced back to 2019 levels, and population trends. More than 205,000 people live in Greater Center City, a number that's climbed 27% since 2010.
The good and bad leave Philly's downtown at a crossroads. And we'll talk about what the future holds with our guest today. Prima Katari Gupta is president and CEO of the Center City District. Prima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And also with us is Mark Cartella, Senior Vice President of Development and Construction at Alterra Property Group. Alterra's portfolio includes some office to residential conversions, which is a topic we wanted to touch on today. So, Mark, welcome to Studio 2.
Good to be here. Thank you so much.
And for all of you listening at home and elsewhere, we want to know, what's your idea for revitalizing Center City? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And so, Prima, we wanted to start with you because we've been talking about these mixed stats with regard to Center City. And for the most part, we keep comparing Center City to this magical time before the pandemic. And you have said chasing recovery has kept us stuck and it's time to come up with a new vision. I want you to lay out your argument.
Absolutely. I think one of the only things that's constant about downtowns is they're constantly changing. I go back to the 90s when I was growing up outside of Hartford, Connecticut. And Hartford was a place that my dad went to work, and there was an art museum there, and I think maybe Mark Twain's house was there, but there wasn't really much else. And, you know, we have seen downtowns evolve from being this office monoculture, which Hartford certainly felt like back then, into becoming thriving mixed-use places where people live, where people play, where people enjoy arts and cultures, go out to eat. And I think Philadelphia is ahead of the curve when it comes to evolving into that mixed-use ecosystem. I'm happy to talk more about that if it's of interest. But I think that's sort of it. Things are changing. Things have always been changing. And I think there's certainly a lot of bright spots and green shoots.
So yeah. Less office, more work and play.
More of all of it. I don't buy the theory that we need to become entertainment zones. That's not what downtowns are. Downtowns are will always be a place where people in the region, people in the city can access work easily, and there's always going to be that concentration and that diversity. That's what makes cities great. But it's going to be more of everything and maybe a different balance.
Yeah, and no more comparing to what it was 6 years ago. Yeah.
No, I don't do that in my own life, so I don't think we should do it with our city either.
Mark, I'm curious how you see Center City. Let me ask the question this way. Are there times of day or days of the week where you really feel Center City pulsing and thriving? And the opposite, are there times of day or days of the week where you feel like this is not what it used to be?
Yeah, sure. So I want to stress evolution and not devolution here, because we are redefining downtown as we know it as we speak. And Prima is exactly right. You know, there's a continuum of evolutions happening real time here in Philadelphia. And I think the answer to your question directly, it really depends on where you are. So, for instance, the Central Business District, mm-hmm. let's see, on Market Street from Market West from City Hall to, let's say, 20th Street. In many ways, even in its heyday, that was still pretty dismal, in my opinion, after hours, after mm-hmm. all the workers went home for the workday, right? And now you're starting to see green shoots pop up. You know, 17 Market West, which is the most recent conversion, I think is evidence of that. 1919 Market and what PMC is doing, 1801 Market Street, and converting that building to a partial office building to a partial apartment building. And so I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic on what this next iteration of downtown living in Philadelphia really is going to be and feel. And I do believe there's a silver lining at play here where we're starting to understand what a true downtown live, work, play environment is starting to feel like coming out of the pandemic, which, you know, was hard on Center City.
Who yeah. wants to live in Center City, Mark? Mm-hmm. Like who is it appealing to, and who's not necessarily looking for Center City living right now based on who you guys project as tenants?
Yeah, sure. So 17 Market West is certainly the highest end product that we've done to date, and we are seeing a lot of more established residents moving into 17 Market West. And I'm talking about people that, you know, are in their 40s, maybe sometimes 50s, even some empty nesters. We also have some children, so there's some young families living in the building. And I see that trend continuing to grow. Prima and I were just catching up. We both have children at home. And there certainly is, I think, an underserved population of people that want to raise a family in the city of Philadelphia. Mm. Yours truly, I would love to be raising my four children here in Center City, Philadelphia. And for the longest time, that was a hard thing to do or a challenging thing to do. So people are doing that, and I give a lot of credit to folks who are. But I think the opportunities and really the options are better than they've ever been coming out of the pandemic. And the conversion of a lot of this office space into residential space arguably is going to be even a greater economic boon for the city, because you have people living there 24/7 and not just commuting in for, you know, a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah. And before we start digging into what makes a good conversion and all of that, Prima, I want to talk about this transition phase, because how do you sort of take an area like Center City from this place where it was very worker focused, you know, business focused, to now we have, you know, more and more people, 27% hike of people moving into Center City. So what are some of the transition points that you have to sort of consider when you have more people just living in an area versus working?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think we're ahead of the game because of a couple of reasons, and I'm going to be a little wonky for a minute.
Sure. Walk away.
Okay.
We walk out here on Studio 2. Don't worry about that.
Phenomenal. I found my people. We had a 10-year tax abatement, which I think accelerated for a period of time residential growth in Center City. And we also have a flexible zoning code that has allowed often, and, you know, you all, Mark, you and your
Indeed.
Team are the experts in this, but it's, you know, you hear people from New York, from San Francisco, elsewhere saying, wow, you guys are just way ahead of us when it comes to conversion, because we have these tools in place.
So that would raise the idea, I guess, that maybe we're converted out. I mean, I could get this back to you now, Mark. I've seen some stats that suggest Philadelphia has already, even before the pandemic, converted a lot of office space to living space.
Over 10 million square feet.
Over 10 million square feet. So how
That's
many square feet realistically are left now, Mark? I mean, are we tapped out and we have to think about other strategies?
So I don't think we're tapped out, no. But I have said this, and I'll say it again. The low-hanging fruit in terms of conversion opportunities, it has been picked.
Yeah.
So there's no more, you know, low-hanging fruit remaining per se. But look, what the fundamentals that we have here in Philadelphia offer are, like Prima just said, a super flexible zoning code, which is not the case for peer cities. And we know, because we looked in peer cities. You know, TF Cornerstone, our partner at Wanamaker, they were blown away about how really seamless and efficient the conversion process is here in Philadelphia.
And just for folks that don't know, TF Cornerstone, with your guys' help, is coming to the old Macy's building, the Wanamaker building, right next to City Hall.
Cool
and they're turning it into a mixed-use project. Some live, some shop, right?
That's right, and then some, and some office as well.
And some office as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And they came down from New York, right? And they were like, whoa, this is way easier than it would be in New York.
Well, they were here for a couple of years because they did own the Macy's condo. Okay,
yeah.
So when things were, encountering some financial issues for the previous owner, they saw an opportunity to seize control of the entire building, and they did that. That culminated this past summer. And so they were also demonstrating a high level of humility, actually, as New York developers coming in and say, look, Philadelphia is different than New York, and there's a lot of nuances that they maybe didn't understand or know. And so that's where, we came into the picture. And like, we can help you navigate the process here. And next, one thing led to another, and they've been great partners of ours, and I hope they would say the same about us. I think they would. And we're looking to break ground. Actually, demolition has already started on the upper levels, and we're planning to start the heavy conversion work, I would say, in February next year. And to your point, yes, there's going to be multi uses under one roof, as you can imagine. And I can talk a lot about the Wanamaker Building, so I want to be sensitive to time here. I can certainly talk about it as much as you guys feel appropriate. But seven of the floors will be residential apartments.
Yeah.
We're talking about like 620 plus apartments.
Wow.
Two of the floors will be office. They're actually office today, so they're being maintained as office. And then the lower three levels are going to be retail and perhaps some cultural uses as well. So we're really excited about having an ecosystem within the ecosystem of Center City under one roof in Wanamaker. And we really hope that's going to be the first domino to fall along Market East and help create sustained economic prosperity along that stretch of Market Street.
And so, Mark, my follow-up to you is sort of what makes projects like these, the one you're doing, like ideal for conversions? And because not every building, we have some tall, huge office towers that have high vacancy rates, right? And so what makes something like the Wanamaker Building or the 1701 building that you're working on? I used to work there, by the way.
Oh, no kidding.
And what makes certain buildings more, I guess, easier to convert than other buildings?
Sure.
So break it down for us.
Yeah, I'll do my best. So Wanamaker is, I would say, a very atypical conversion for a lot of different reasons. 17 Market West is more of a textbook conversion, I would say, and there's really kind of five governing principles that make a good conversion candidate, one of which is location, of course, we all know that. The other, which is zoning, which we've talked about. The third is floor plates, the dimensions. Does it lay out? Is it an efficient layout for a residential use? The fourth is tenancy. Okay, so how vacant is the building? And 17 Market West, we were fortunate just to have kind of one major anchor tenant in the building. That was, of course, Morgan Lewis. So when they vacated and moved a little bit west on our Market Street,
it's almost like a blank slate.
It's like a blank slate, exactly right. And so you don't get mired in this long, protracted de-leasing effort, which can be very costly and really kill a pro forma. And then the fifth element there is, of course, basis. And you mentioned, I think, previously that there's some fire sales happening right now. That's certainly an accurate, I think, depiction of some of these assets that are trading. So between those five kind of governing principles, I say, that really does create the ideal candidate for a conversion. Now, Wanamaker is a little bit unique in the sense that the floor plates are very deep, and so we had to get a little creative. Priyam and I were just catching up a little bit before on kind of what architectural design novel ideas we've taken to help eliminate the inefficiency or the loss of space within those deep floor plates.
Now, but what you said earlier, Mark, is that the low-hanging fruit has been picked at this point. So then I guess the question for you, Prima, is if that's the case, how do we get the fruit that's higher up the tree? Like, what's the ladder needed to pick that fruit? Like, what type of physical infrastructure changes could we see in Center City over the next, let's say, 10 years that are doable and that would move the downtown toward this mixed-use future that we've been talking about?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think, if I could answer your color question for a minute, what revitalizes cities? People revitalize cities.
Yeah.
So I think as we continue to generate really cool uses that attract people from all over the region, we have, whether it's Chubb building a gorgeous new world headquarters in Philadelphia with, I think, 3,200 employees, more than 1,000 of whom are new to the region, I believe. We saw Stateside Vodka just signed a deal to be in Center City. So these are people. Calder brings people. Barromini brings people. We're trying to do our part with events like Open Streets, which thank you for mentioning at the top, and doing stuff in our parks. But I think we need to increasingly be firing on all cylinders to make Center City a place where people from all over the region, all over the city want to be. And that will drive more.
Yeah. Is it still going to be these big office mm-hmm. towers? Some of those going to have to be, I don't know, radically reimagined, like as physical structures. You know what I mean? Like, because yeah. I could see an argument for like, not that I don't know how this would ever happen, but being like, well, this is now a neighborhood for families. We right. don't want a big tower here. We want a park or something that appeals.
Why not both? We've got Dilworth Park, which yeah. and Sister Cities Park, both managed by Center City District, attract a lot of families, both next to high-rise apartment buildings.
So that's going to coexist in this future.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's the hope, right? Yeah. I think that's the hope. And I think there's some office buildings that will want to be office buildings forever based on how mm-hmm. you know, they were built and constructed. But there's no reason why I think you can't have the best of both worlds.
Yeah. By the way, I want to bring in a caller. And our question of the day for you, our listeners, is this. What is your idea for revitalizing Center City? We know you guys have great ideas. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, leave your comments in the chat. We have Jeffrey from Center City on the line, a resident of Center City. Jeffrey, you're on Studio 2. What's your big idea?
Hi, everybody. Thank you for taking my call. First, I wanted to say I got married at the Crystal Tea Room last year in the Wanamaker building. So it's great to hear Terrific. That it's you know, getting revitalized and being renewed.
But, and congratulations, by the way, Jeffrey.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I had to say that. To pick up on that last topic, I think the key to getting people to come to the Center City and stay in Center City really is going to be the green spaces and the parks. So my question for y'all is, how do you promote that with the city leaders and the movers and shakers, with the knowledge that they may not necessarily bring as much capital in, but would be more popular with some of the residents?
Yeah, thank you, Jeffrey from Center City. Primo, we'll toss that one to you. Sort of, I mean, green space, people love it. It's great for kids, great for families. How do you promote that, knowing you may not get as much tax revenue?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think a public realm strategy is a key part of our work at Center City District, which obviously starts with our kind of on-street operations, keeping downtown clean and safe. But, you know, I think we're always trying to be creative about how we can make our parks and public spaces amenities. We currently have this really cool art installation at Dilworth Park. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet.
Oh, the water
the
thing.
Wand.
Yeah.
The wand.
Yes.
The wand controls the fountain,
it's
basically.
Like if you saw the movie Fantasia as a kid, you can sort of, I guess, play God a little bit with the fountain and with the music. And it's this really fun partnership with the Philadelphia Orchestra to celebrate their 125th year. So I think, and to me, that's like this very kid-friendly thing. I think, you know, it's. I would encourage anyone who's in a bad mood to spend 5 or 10 minutes watching people do this, because first of all, the most like sullen teenager will like walk off of the podium with a big smile on their mm-hmm. face. And it's particularly fun to see adults try it out. And it just, it kind of takes you over. I would say similarly with Open Streets, if we could talk about that for a quick minute. This is a program that we started last September, where we have temporarily pedestrianized 8 blocks of our kind of shopping high street. The bet there was, do pedestrians spend more money or do automobiles spend more money? I think we kind of know where this is going. And so with this event, we have seen 30% or more increases in pedestrian volumes, which very much translates into sales. And that, to your point, creating places for people, families, I think it's been a great place for kids. How it's almost, you know, on some level, it feels like a little bit of a natural extension of Rittenhouse Square. Now we've got this larger public space temporarily. And from that perspective, it's been great. From the perspective of the restaurants and retailers, it's been great. But, you know, one of the other things that's been interesting to our team is that it feels like it's an event, you know, not unlike the fountain thing I just described, where it puts people in a good mood. And I think we all need signs of progress and optimism right now. And it's been that as well.
And that sort of goes back to the question that I asked originally to you, Primo, was sort of the infrastructure that you build around a more residential downtown, mm-hmm. right? You don't need necessarily open streets for when it's very worker focused.
Right.
But you need it.
Or commuting for that matter.
Or commuting focus, right? Yep. But something like that makes it more residential focus. Are there other things that are in the works? Because it seems like that, and I was a part of, I went down to Open Streets recently, and it was really cool. And so you talk, like, I want you to talk about some of the infrastructure you build when you have someone like Mark bringing hundreds and hundreds of more people living spaces downtown.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it, right? One of our competitive advantages as a city, and I heard you say this at the top, we're walkable.
Yeah.
You know, there are very few downtowns that were built before the automobile. We are built around transportation and walkability. That's our DNA. And I think thinking through what projects we can do to reinforce that is really important to us. Obviously, it starts with clean and safe. If the walk doesn't feel good, isn't comfortable, you don't feel safe, you know, that's the baseline condition. But on top of that, how can we make it more fun, more beautiful, more delightful? That's what we've been in the business of for more than 30 years.
Yeah, it's making me think actually of a trip I took recently mm-hmm. to Nashville. I've never been to Nashville before. And it was clean. Like, they had the cleanliness part down
yeah.
in the downtown area. But it just felt too big. It didn't feel human. Like, the streets were too wide. Things were too far spaced. So you guys have that advantage where have that advantage where it is at a human scale on some level. What I hear you saying, Prima, is less that, like, we're going to be like knocking down big towers or totally reimagine the infrastructure. It's more that we're going to flex the infrastructure we have to make it more pedestrian focused or bike focused. Do I have that right? Like, it's not going to be like wholesale, like street grid reimagining. It's going to be like, let's take this thing we already have and repurpose it in some way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I think even when you look at the cities globally that have sort of changed in terms of walkability and livability, they've done exactly that, whether yeah. it's Mexico City or Paris or Copenhagen, they've reworked what they have.
Yeah. Yeah. Another caller should we bring in
here? Yeah, let's bring in Apollo from Doylestown, who's on the line. Apollo, you're on Studio 2. What's your big idea?
Is it possible to have the corporations tie into their lease somehow, the ability to give back for the green space close to their buildings or somewhere within the city, so we're not losing tax revenue by more green space, but we're gaining it through a partnership with the corporations that are taking over?
I like that idea, Apollo. I think on some level, that's what Center City District does, right?
That's
like
right.
folks who operate downtown pay a little bit, and then they get some cleaning and greening services. Mm-hmm. They help maintain some of these parks. But Mark, is that something you could see expanding? What do you think about that possibility that Apollo raises?
Yeah, no, I think you're correct. That's in some ways already happening. And I also throw in the UNO tax. I mean, that's also intended to, you know, help fund some of the public services here in Center City. So, you know, we want to make downtown Philadelphia as business friendly as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And adding in another level of cost or another tiered cost there, I think is actually going in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, look, we selfishly as owner developers in town want to see vibrant communities, vibrant blocks that don't just stop at 5 p.m., that are, you know, truly a 24/7 city. And I, you know, we have, again, all the fundamentals to get us there for all the reasons that we've already discussed.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, so long as we continue to keep the streets safe and clean and foster business growth, and perhaps, you know, kudos to the mayor to bringing this into the forefront of the discussion about mm-hmm. taxation. You know, we have a lot going for us, and especially when compared to other peer cities, we're ahead of the game in many respects.
Very interesting. By the way, Ray from Collegeville says, reduce sales tax in Philadelphia and increase sales tax in the collar counties. That's Ray from Collegeville. Susan says, work on public transportation. Make it easy and pleasant to use. My husband and I always use it to come to restaurants, entertainment, and more. If it was dependable and easy to figure out, more would come downtown on a regular basis. Some of the ideas we're getting from our listeners.
Yeah, hard to argue with that mm-hmm. one. Keep those ideas coming. 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. We're asking you this hour, what's your idea for revitalizing Center City, helping it grow into the future? You're listening to Studio 2 on WHYY. We'll be right back after a short break.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We are talking about the future of Center City this hour. Let me reintroduce our guests. Prima Kattari Gupta is president and CEO of the Center City District, and Mark Cartella is senior vice president of development and construction at Alterra Property Group, LLC.
Yes, and for you, our listeners at home, on the road, or elsewhere, we want to hear your ideas and questions when it comes to Philly. The big question of the day, what's your idea for revitalizing Center City? To participate, all you got to do is call 888 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, put your comment in the chat.
Let's bring in another caller now. We have Lisa from South Philly on line four. Lisa, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hi, everyone. I love Center City, longtime resident. For a change of pace, my husband and I, a little over a year ago, had moved into an apartment building, a high-rise, right across from City Hall. And we recently just moved out.
Oh.
And the reason is because something I don't think nobody seems to talk about, but every Friday and Saturday night, and some other nights too, and especially in the summer, there are large groups of people riding motorcycles, four-wheelers, three-wheelers, all kinds of, we call it the motocross, and like going around City Hall and up and down Broad Street until like 4 in the morning at least. There was never anyone chasing them away or asking them to stop. And we literally could not sleep for a year in our apartment.
Hmm.
So that's just kind of something that I haven't heard people talk about, but I can tell you it's an issue.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa from South Philly. Prima, I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, I will say I hear people talk about it quite often. I think it is certainly top of mind for residents, particularly those around City Hall. My understanding, though, is I think, you know, we've got a great inspector in the Central Division for PPD, and I think they've made a lot of really good progress around enforcement. And I think, you know, I mean, thanks to the mayor's leadership, I think it's gotten better, but I hear you, Lisa.
Yeah. By the way, I was hosting an event on a rooftop right off of Broad Street and could not speak for several minutes
for this
because there were and people were so upset during that event. But, by the way, I wanted to read this question from Deborah, and a couple people asked this, and this is to you, Mark. Deborah says, when I visualize a converted apartment, I think, A, expensive luxury, and who can afford to live there? How accurate is my imagination, and is the city at all interested in using the situation to create more affordable housing? Because I know some of the properties that you're working on, they are luxury properties. There's an infinity pool at 1701. It
sounds
really amazing.
That's right.
And so is there space for more affordable, modest living?
There certainly is. And look, we want to, I think everyone here wants to have a truly diverse downtown, and diverse by every sense of the meaning of the word, right? And so, you know, I'm happy this question was asked because it just so happens we are working at 2012 Chestnut Street with PHA,
mm-hmm.
which will be a 14-story tower, 121 units, that will be truly an affordable building, of varying degrees of affordability. I'm talking big A, not little A here. And we're also in conversations with PHA to do even more downtown, more to come on that. I think it's a little bit too premature to share some details, but absolutely, I think, you know, the runway is very deep for not only, you know, the one percenters of the world to be living downtown, but a truly mixed income, diverse community is what everyone's goal.
What policies
really
need to be in place so that it
that
everyone who's involved gets what they need? Because obviously the developer needs to be able to turn a profit in order to be involved
sure.
in this. And then the resident needs to be able to afford the apartment or whatever it is, the condo. So what is the mechanism that makes that possible?
Yeah, it's complex, right? And so I think to maybe distill that into a more palatable conversation would be, you know, public-private partnerships is really in collaboration with city officials, city leaders, helping achieve, you know, helping the mayor achieve her goal of 30,000 new or preserved units, you know, over the course of her tenure. It's really going to be the special sauce that makes all that work, because you're right, economically speaking, when you look at a project on paper, it's very difficult to absorb any percentage of affordable units within your overall unit mix.
Can you give us a sense of maybe in proportion, though? Like, does government need to cover half the cost, 10% of the cost, 80% of the cost to get to that place of profitability for the developer?
Yeah, there's so many variables. I'm not going to talk about certain ratios or percentages, because every project's so different and unique. But I will say that PHA has been a great partner at 2012 Chestnut Street. That's been a project in the germination period for 7+ years. And the conversations that I just referenced with doing more with PHA are also very encouraging. And they, I think, are, well, I know that they are now securing and buying actually ground up construction for the use of affordable housing from, you know, what was traditionally market rate developers here in town. And so whether that's a true sale or whether or not it's like a master lease with, you know, the voucher program that PHA offers, I think there's a lot of tools that we have in our tool belt to leverage there to make sure that, you know, the affordable housing is being met, not only, you know, city at large, but also in Center City proper.
Yeah, and Prima, I wonder if there's anything Center City District can lobby for to ensure, and even if it's not, you know, lower income housing, but something in the middle that's not maybe top shelf luxury, but that would make sure that there's, you know, mixed income living downtown.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, just to reinforce what Mark said, I think what makes downtown great is its diversity and that there are really economic opportunities and housing opportunities, hopefully, too, for everyone. So I think that there's, you know, it's certainly a priority of ours as well.
Yeah. Are there any policies that you would say help do that?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on that, but okay. I have to think that, you know, if we do, if you sort of believe that we do have an abundance of office, some of that would be very appropriate, perhaps, mm-hmm. for conversion into affordable housing. I think it makes sense, but I'm not an expert.
Got it.
Let me bring in another caller now. Here's Eric from Yardley on line five. Hey, Eric, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah,
I think
hi.
Eric wants to talk about an example from overseas, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't live in Center City. Our daughter does, and I absolutely love Center City. As an old New Yorker, I actually feel much more comfortable in Philly than I do in New York. But I've been into a lot of cities around the world, and the one that is my favorite for walking is Prague. Oh. Now, I understand that's a completely different culture, and it's a medieval city, and Philadelphia is obviously not a medieval city. But the thing that makes Prague just so wonderful is, A, it's quiet. And I understand that's a cultural thing. They don't honk their horns over there.
That's a lot of honking here.
That. But you know, we had a hotel room right next to the major transit hub. And when I first got there, I was like appalled because I think I'm never going to get any sleep. But I did because their system is so quiet. And it makes the whole experience of these cars, it's all about the pedestrian experience on the street level.
Yeah.
And I do love that about Philly, but the cars, it's really, if I had one name, it's the cars and the noise.
Yeah,
that's why I applaud what's going on with the Ben. The idea of turning that whole thing, the Ben Franklin Parkway, into a park, I think is that's it, man.
Yeah.
And capping over I-95. I mean, that's it. Look what they did in Boston with the Big Dig.
Yeah. Thank you. That's
Eric
from Yardley.
Well, can I just piggyback off of that, because we did talk about noise earlier, Prima, but I feel like this is just me spitballing here, me projecting, but I feel like the people who can put up with the noise and the busyness, they're in Center City. They're bought in. It's someone like me on the fringe. I'm like, I would do Center City. I live in South Philly, but I would do it if it was a little quieter. And so, like, how could you take a place that is inherently noisy and busy as Center City and, like, take the decibel level down a little bit? Is that an infrastructure change? I can't imagine it's going to be a culture change, because how could you possibly effectuate
it's
that at eye level?
Yeah.
But like, what could you do?
I'm sure Mark has a double or triple pane window apartment that he could rent to you. And good noise
it's
attenuation.
It's the windows? Is that what it is?
No, I think it's all these things. But here, again, sorry I keep going back to open streets. But one of the things that we were all struck by when we did it, and I think this reinforces the caller's point, is that how quiet it was when you took the cars off Walnut Street. That was the one thing that I think we were all even surprised by. And I wish I could remember the reading, but we did have somebody go out with a decibel monitor because we were curious about it. But yeah, to be sure, they do make noise, and there are things that we can do.
Yeah, and I think about now the along Broad Street, you have to go 25, and I've been slowing down.
Yeah.
You know, just slowing down the traffic.
Maybe
I wonder how that.
Cameras. Yeah.
I wonder how that impacts. We have a. Let me read a couple comments. Jill says, if you really want to revitalize Center City, you first need to make it safer. Watch Out Philly is an Instagram that my friends and I follow that continually reports about street harassment and women being attacked or witnessing public masturbation. She says we need stronger enforcement on the street to make it safe for families to want to come visit Philly. Tavoni says convert office buildings to work live spaces to capture wage taxes, attract the remote workers, and temporarily move schools into the building so the older school building can be fixed. Just some ideas we have. Safety and schools.
Mark, looking forward, we talked about this earlier. You said it in your own words. The low-hanging fruit has been picked in terms of conversion. So what investment opportunities are left? What do you guys look at, and where do you see opportunity in Center City? And what might prevent you from making those investments right now?
So in terms of the opportunity at hand, again, I have to go back to the fire sale comment, which is, you know, that's not wrong. A lot of these properties are trading at distressed, you know, valuations.
Yeah, and these are office buildings that are not doing so hot.
That is exactly right. So when you have, you know, 40, 50, 60% vacancy, you know, that there's a problem there economically.
But when you say that it's a handful of properties, it's now, not the overall asset class.
That's okay. Right. But in terms of like what creates opportunity, and that's right. A lot of the good news is that a lot of them have now been stabilized. There's been a flight to quality. So
sorry to interrupt.
No. That's right. Yeah. I appreciate the input. Some of the more trophy, you know, class A plus, you know, occupancy has been going very, very well.
Yeah. So I think I got some stats here. So according to Center City District,
I see you've got the Center City District data dashboard.
It's a nice dashboard. I'll give you credit. Center City's trophy class office occupancy is 85.5%. Class A, however, office occupancy is 74.5%. So maybe that's where the opportunity is.
That's right.
So there's some types of office buildings that people just don't desire as much anymore, and probably will not into the future.
I agree with that. And so what that allows is that, you know, new owners to buy the property and then do it some level of conversion, or even if you're maintaining it as office space, you're able to then offer that office space at a discounted rate of what it was previously. So the rubber's meeting the road in many regards in terms of these assets, you know, changing their use or changing the next use within their life cycle, and you know, that's a result of you know, that higher vacancy rate than what would be ideal in some of those buildings. Now, again, Philadelphia, in many ways, has been a pioneer of the poster child of conversions. Conversions is nothing new here in Philadelphia. You know, 17 Market West was, I think, the 15th conversion we've done in the last 15 years.
That's why I'm thinking maybe conversion is not necessarily the path forward, but basically, like you said, waiting for prices to drop low enough that you can get like a new, on some types of properties, that you can give them a new life because you don't have to spend that much to buy it.
Exactly right. And that's what's happening right now as we speak. I mean, it's a really interesting time to be in the real estate, you know, industry here in Philadelphia because of that reason. And I truly, in my heart of hearts, believe in the next 5-10 years, we're going to be looking back at this point in time and saying, man, what a great time it was to invest in Philadelphia.
Oh, interesting.
So interesting. Maybe we can bring in one more caller. We have Jesse from East Passyunk on the line with the big idea. Jesse, you're on Studio 2. We want to hear what you got.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a former dancer with Ballet X, and we did pop-ups everywhere in the city. And some of the, you know, best cities that I've been to, my favorite cities, have all had outdoor stages sort of more centralized. And I know we got the Mann Center, but that's difficult for many Philadelphians to get to. There's a, you know, sometimes there's a price barrier between seeing live arts. We've got so many beautiful artists, some of the best in the country, Curtis, Opera Philadelphia, all the orchestra, the dance companies, like an outdoor stage near Rittenhouse that's open to the public with, you know, consistent performances would bring so much traffic into the city.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Jesse from East Pakistan has an idea.
What I was going to say, I've got a stat for you, Jesse, and for everyone. Center City Philadelphia has more arts and cultural organizations in the footprint than any other place other than Manhattan.
Wow.
And we don't have an outdoor stage, and I love Ballet X, and we bring Ballet X to Dilworth Park for a free concert once a year, but that's not enough. I think that's such an awesome idea, Jesse.
That feels to me like the type of project, whether that specific thing happens or not, that fits the vision of a future Center City, because it really does service people who live there.
Yeah, and it makes our amazing world-class arts and culture publicly accessible, which we love.
Yeah,
that's such a great idea.
I love that idea. And so if you have, you know, what's next on your agenda here? Because if we're talking about really converting, you said this is going to be a key time, a golden age, I guess, of Philadelphia real estate. What's next on the agenda for you?
Yeah, so we already talked about the Wanamaker, mm-hmm. which is going to keep us busy for the foreseeable future. There's a lot to do there.
It's a big building.
It's a big building.
It's bigger than Comcast. Is that the statistic? That's right.
It's 1.5 million square feet under roof, full city block.
Still going to have an organ, still going to have an eagle?
Absolutely. Still going to have both and the Christmas light show. There's been a lot of community engagement with the various groups that use that building as it's a venue. In fact, we're looking to open it up for Philadelphia Opera and other users to continue a program schedule into the holiday season. So that's our plan. In terms of what else is out there, Leo Adamondo mentioned 1500 Market Street recently, and that is something we're taking a hard look at as well. So stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned on 1500 Market Street, right next to City Hall, man.
That's right.
Okay.
I love it.
That's right. That's Mark Cartella. That's Mark Cartella, Senior Vice President of Development and Construction at Alterra Property Group, LLC. Mark, thanks for your time this hour on Studio 2.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Prima Kothari Gupta, President and CEO of the Center City District here in Philly. Thank you, Prima, for your time today.
This was fun. Thank you.
Yep.
Yes. And sorry we couldn't get to you, Maureen from Doylestown or Sally from Montgomeryville, but we appreciate you calling into the show. Hopefully we'll get you next time. Thank you to our producers, Debbie Bilton, Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calliquet, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett, signing off for now, saying thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.